Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turteltaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today from the United Kingdom is Andre Bywater. Andre is a partner at Quarterly Compliance and a frequent guest on the podcast. And today we're going to be talking about post-Brexit implications for compliance. Andre, first, thanks for taking the time to talk to us again.
My pleasure. Thank you, Adam. Always good to be talking with you.
And always great to be talking with you as well. So can you say in a few points what the new deal between the EU and the UK is all about and what it likely means?
Yeah, sure. Well, we have this new agreement that applies from the beginning of this year. We finally made it. It took 4 years. And it's called the Trade and Cooperation Agreement. So it's basically a trade agreement. But the key thing to understand about it is it's about goods, not really services. And what it aims to do is to make sure that there's kind of tariff-free trade between the UK and the EU. So that's a good thing. But the flip side of that is you've got customs checks, form filling, and so on and so on. And that's not so great. And it's not going so smoothly, I'm afraid. So if you're a US organization and you're shipping to the UK to then ship to the EU or vice versa, these are the sorts of things you're gonna have to think about. But the deal's about other things too. It's about having a kind of level playing field for sort of cooperating on things like controlling subsidies and other things like law enforcement and so on. But it's not the end of the story, although everyone thinks Brexit's a done deal, because the EU and the UK are going to be talking about other issues further up the line, as it were. As I mentioned, the deal isn't really about services, and that's most of the UK's economy. Really important things like financial services that they're going to try and see if they can open that up. So that will be of interest, I'm sure, to folks in the US. You've got big UK operations in London, for example. So that's kind of it in a nutshell.
Yeah, and it's a complicated nutshell because, you know, in some ways things are resolved, but there's so many others that have yet to be done. And as you noted, services are just incredibly important to the UK economy. Now, is there anything in the new deal about compliance? For example, you know, privacy is an enormous issue when dealing with GDPR. So how is privacy affected?
Well, compliance isn't dealt with directly. There's more of a kind of indirect impact. There are lots of things in the deal about like maintaining anti-money laundering standards, for example. And we'll have to see if there's any kind of divergence there. But privacy, you're absolutely right to pick on that. That's really, really key. And what we have, because the big fear was that we would fall off the cliff at the end of the 31st of December of last year, and that we wouldn't be able to transfer data freely between the EU and the UK. But that didn't happen, because in this new deal, they've provided a bridging provision so that for the next 4 months, can be extended to two, we can transfer data freely, as it were, until they come up with yet another thing they have to negotiate, what's called an adequacy decision. But I think the kind of upshot there, if you're a US organization, is that you've got to understand now that since the UK's left the EU, it's got its own standalone privacy regime. So we're going to have to get in place in the UK arrangements with the US, like how we transfer data to the US. For example, we may get a US-UK privacy style arrangement. So they're the sorts of things we have to think about that are you know, I think going to be important. So that was good news in one sense, but yet again, it's just another thing to be negotiated. We've got more deadlines to meet and so on. And as you said, that it's just going to go on, really, the Brexit process in one sense. We'll be a bit like Switzerland and the EU, where they keep having to negotiate separate deals for all these things. So there you go.
There you go. And separate deals make for difficulties and complexities, that's for sure. Now, when it comes to sanctions, the U.S. and the EU have not always seen eye to eye recently, most notably with a case with Iran. Where is the U.K. likely to end up on the spectrum between the U.S. and the EU? And what should compliance teams do to ensure that their U.K. teams don't go astray in this area?
Well, that's a good one to talk about, because I think that's an area where I think the UK is going to really want to, if you like, make its mark. Since it's left the EU, it's got its own regime. It's already been in existence for 2 years. And we've already seen the UK using that regime for things like Belarus and kind of Magnitsky issues and things like the sort of unlawful killing of Jamal Khashoggi and things like that. So the UK is already doing things there which are different to the EU and I think to different to the US as well. And I think, but the main thing to think about if you're on a compliance team is you're now going to have an extra list to look at, or possibly even three lists, because the UK will operate like the OFAC schemes of the US. The ones in the UK are become a similar name, OFSI, if you like, the Office for Financial Sanctions Implementation. They have their lists already. So compliance team's going to have to look at those when it's also looking at its US and EU list. And by the way, on your point about the EU, the EU is actually taking a new approach to strengthening its sanctions. And they're actually trying to push back even more on US extraterritorial areas. So again, it's just another layer that the UK has added to for compliance teams to look at.
Layers upon layers. Now, how should multinational companies address the potential labor issues created now that there isn't the free movement of people between the EU and the UK?
Yeah, this is an important one, Adam, I think, because as you point out, no more free movement. And so, yeah, businesses basically need to educate themselves and come up with a plan. So, for example, if you're an organization, multinational organization, if you've got EU citizens in the UK, they've already been in the UK for 5 years, up to the end of December of last year, they can apply to stay, they get a special status. If that period's less than 5 years, you can apply to stay in the UK, got a slightly different status and so on. So there's quite a bit of paperwork to be done. And if you're coming into the country from the 1st of January of this year, you have to apply for a visa under a new sort of immigration scheme. So there's that consider within the UK. But then if you're looking to other countries, so let's say you're a multinational organization, you've got people in the UK and you want to send them to Germany or France or Italy and so on, you're going to have to deal with each of those countries' rules. There's no kind of EU broad set of rules. So all those usual questions you have to look at, like is it short stay, long stay? Seems to be 90 days is about what most countries seem to be allowing to be visa free. Do I need a residency permit? You know, interviews with immigration, fees to be paid. There are even quotas for some jobs. So I'm afraid there's going to be quite a bit of paperwork. Sadly, those days when you could just say you're going there on Monday, pack your bags, and that's it. Those are gone, I'm afraid. Quite a bit of paperwork to be dealt with.
Well, with all the difficulties in travel now, at least there's a little time for compliance people to figure out how to navigate that. Now, one last question.
Absolutely.
Is there a particular area of compliance that the UK might focus more on in the future? I mean, the UK with for example, the Bribery Act had a profound effect on compliance programs. Are there other areas that we're likely to see something similar?
I think so, Adam. We have this modern Slavery Compliance Act, which is inspired by the Californian Act. And that's been in place for a few years now. And there are plans to beef that up. And I think that will definitely be one that the UK will be pushing forward. And that's been given a new lease of life recently, we've had a big inquiry in our parliament about supply chains and human rights abuses of Uyghurs in Xinjiang in China. And we're looking now to beef up the modern slavery compliance rules. We may even have things like you have in the US about controlling products that are coming into the country and so on. So I think that's really one to look for. I think it's modern slavery compliance is going to get a lot tougher. It's going to get enforcement teeth, I think. So that's definitely one to follow.
And as I recall, there was existing rules, but those were more disclosure oriented, correct?
That's right, exactly. So they want to beef up those disclosure requirements, but they want to beef up the enforcement requirements as well. So, for example, it could be making directors liable and things like that if they haven't done the disclosure requirements properly. So it's a bit of both.
Well, there's definitely a lot for compliance teams to be thinking about and continue to be watching because, you know, as we've noted, this is not the end of the process. It was a significant change in it with, you know, the Brexit deadline coming, but there's likely much more to follow and much more to people to watch out for. Well, Andre, thanks for taking the time to take us through all of this. I want to thank all of you for listening. I'm Adam Turtletaub from SCCE and HCCA. I hope we're able to expand your compliance perspective.